Hello, everyone.
What was that?
I don't know, because now I'm seeing my voice and, like, how much volume I have, and I know our previous podcast, I spoke too low.
That's why you have your own microphone.
Hello.
Hey-o.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone. And welcome to
the Job Project. Not Job.
Not Job.
Job from the Bible. Old Testament.
Yeah, how are you going to mispronounce Bible, but say Job and correct everybody with Job?
Because I'm an enigma and I do things the way that I feel it's right to me.
Y'all know what the Job Project is about. We seek to discover the intersectionalities between mental health and the gospel. We want to debunk myths and stop over-spiritualizing mental health. Sorry, we were Parks just and watching Rec. Parks and Rec.
Parks so, and Rec. Shout out to all our Parks and Rec fans. That is a testament to John Ralphio, who is easily becoming Chris's favorite character.
Whoa. Don't do that. He's not my favorite.
Who is your favorite?
My favorite is Ben Wyatt, Barnum.
Oh,
and
right.
Then it's Leslie, and then it's Ron, and then it's Donna, and then maybe
John Ralphio.
Maybe John Ralphio.
True.
But
Chris and I feel like we identify a lot with Leslie and Ben. Except I'm not as intense as Leslie.
And I'm not as much of a nerd as Ben.
And I'm definitely a lot more self-aware than Leslie, I would argue.
And I'm not as sarcastic. Well, I could.
You could be.
I could be. Anyway.
Valerie,
what are we talking about today?
Self-sabotage.
Self-sabotage.
Ooh.
I don't know what that sound effect was, but self-sabotage. All right, so then what is that?
So, self-sabotage, as per my research.
As per the research,
because I could give you, like, my own definition, but it's going to be, like, super layman's term, so I'm going to give the official one for those who like an official definition. Essentially, self-sabotage is actively or passively taking steps to prevent yourself from reaching your own goals. So that could be career goals, that could be school goals, that could be physical health goals, that could be mental health goals. Goals of any kind fit within this category.
Got it. Okay. Now, what was your layman's term definition?
Self-sabotage is you getting in your own way of your amazingness to prevent you from doing the amazing things that God has called you to do.
Okay.
Lots of amazing in there, but it's because
a ton of amazing.
God is amazing.
God is amazing.
And so are we.
Okay, here's a question that's not on the thing because I always like to go rogue. Why is this important?
Self-sabotage?
Self-sabotage. Or talking about not self-sabotaging. Why is that important?
I feel like it's important because it's something that a majority, if not all of us, operate in to some point. And I think it can often eclipse our understanding of who God created us to be, and also our understanding of God himself.
Mm-hmm.
I think self-sabotage comes from, I think it's like a default thing of being like a fallen human being and recognizing that our dysfunction and our fears and our trauma and anything that has caused a negative impact on our lives, it wreaks havoc and it causes a lot of issues. And I think it's important because unless we recognize those patterns, unless we recognize the things that impact us that cause these patterns, we're just going to fall victim to them over and over and over again. And seeking the Lord on them is going to be difficult because we don't even know what we're seeking the Lord about. We're like, Lord, we want to do this, but we can't seem to get there. And it could very well be God is telling you, wait. It could very well be external circumstances that are a little bit trickier. But oftentimes, it could really just be us getting in our own way, honestly. So, it's right. Most likely that, I feel like. But, you know, I digress.
Well, there we go. That's the whole episode. Thank y'all for listening.
Bye!
Bye! No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so that's why self-sabotage or talking about this is important. Y'all,
Wait, I want to ask you, Chris.
What are you asking me?
What about you? Why do you think self-sabotage is a topic that's super important?
First, I think it's important because we need more episodes. Second,
yeah, y'all, we're sorry. We've obviously this episode is going to come close to heart because we do a lot of self-sabotaging that we're working on and praying through and going to therapy for, which also includes, full transparency, this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We'll go into detail a little bit later, but
yeah. Well, I also think about the fact that I'm a self-proclaimed self-saboteur, because saboteur is the French word that means person who sabotages.
Excuse me.
Yeah, listen, I went to music school, but I went to school, you feel me?
It's the fancy pants.
Fancy pants. I'm in sweats. Come on. But I am very well acquainted with self-sabotage, just because I think about how many times I've had opportunities come up that I've lost because I either didn't set myself up for success or I didn't take the appropriate steps to make sure that I would be okay. Here's an example. One time in college, I wasn't in grad school yet, but my dance teacher, he had a dance company outside of the school. Yeah, I had danced, by the way. I'm basically professionally trained New York City Ballet, holla at your boy. But no one laughed. That's fine. Thanks, babe. But yeah, so he was doing this holiday show. And he said, I would love to have you come in and sing for the holiday show. And I was the only underclassman that he asked. Everyone else was either in grad school or already a professional, right? But he was just a dance director. He wasn't the music director. So I made it to the first rehearsal, and that was fine. The second rehearsal, I was late, and the director was mad. Not the dance teacher, the director. He was mad, and he's like, you can't be late again, right? So then the third rehearsal was on Mother's Day. Now, me, I'm like, why would you have a rehearsal on Mother's Day? I did not check my calendar, didn't check my email, because in my head, I knew better. And I was like, no, it can't be Mother's Day. So then I got a call and an email. He was really upset, but then he was like, okay, I understand, but you can't be late again. So then for my last rehearsal, before I got fired, because I got fired from this, I knew what time I had to be there, right? But I didn't make sure that I had enough money. And I thought about making sure I had enough money for the train or for the bus, but I didn't make sure that I had it with me. So instead of calling ahead or asking to like borrow some money because this job is going to be paid, I walked across town. And instead of doing what I could to meet the gap that I already had, I instead tried to create a sob story for myself so that he would feel sorry for me and hopefully not fire me. Which I think was self-sabotage because that was a goal that I was trying to reach. I was trying to keep the job, but I didn't take the steps to prevent myself from not meeting that goal. That sounded confusing. I didn't take the steps to make sure that I was going to be successful. And a lot of it came from, this was the first big performance job I would have ever had. This was the first time I'd be working with an actual director, with actual upperclassmen and professional singers. I was already nervous, even though I knew all of the music. And just like that, he fired me, and the other tenor that was there sang all of my parts, and the show went on without a hitch. And, there were no hard feelings, but it was like, I can't work with you. So with that particular director, I had a bad reputation because I sabotaged myself. That story went on for 9 years, and I don't think that I was supposed to talk that long, but now I did. So there you go. That's my story of self-sabotage. There's my input.
First of all, this is a podcast. Please tell the story because a bunch of people can probably be like, oh, I thought I was the only one that did stuff like that. Yeah. So please share your story and shut up about talking too much. It's a podcast. We're talking into microphones. It's being recorded. And people are going to listen to it and be like, thank you, Chris, for being transparent because I needed to hear that because I thought I was crazy and doing this stuff on my own. But now that I know that it's something like this, now I can figure out ways to keep myself from being put in that position again.
Right.
So, anyways, I was going to ask you, because what we're going to go into is like, why do people self-sabotage? Like, where does that come from? So I was going to ask you, based off of that example, why did you feel that you operated in these ways that ended up getting you fired, unfortunately? And why would those be more self-sabotage versus mistakes or, you know, things like that. I mean, they are mistakes, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing I think of is this idea of imposter syndrome. We've talked about that on here. Go watch that episode.
Listen.
That's what I meant. Or watch it if, you know, you want to just look at your phone. Anyway, I think of self-sabotage because, like I said, I was an underclassman. I think I was either a sophomore or a junior in college, which means I didn't have any professional performing credits. This would have been my very first professional performance. I was performing with a professional dance company with a professional director and other professional singers. Because upperclassmen and grad school students usually are performing outside of school too and getting professional credits. So it would be my first professional gig. And I'm like, this little black boy from the Bronx is about to sing some Gilbert and Sullivan in front of white people dancing in front of more white people. And looking back, I feel like I psyched myself out a lot because I was excited about it, but also really nervous, right? It was all music that I could sing. It was very much stuff that I could do, but I felt like I couldn't do it because I was stacking myself up against the other people that I'd be performing with. Now, looking back, I'm going to say this to the audience. Hey, you person. I was better than that singer, okay? I'm just being confident. My therapist told me that I need to do that. But, like, looking back, I didn't really have a reason to think that I would be, like, the weak link in the performance, which I think is another part of it. I was also really afraid of being seen as, like, less than capable. Because I'm already an underclassman going into this situation. So now it's like, whoa, the pressure is on because you're not a professional, but you don't want the audience or the other people to think that you're not a professional, right? But you're not a professional. So since you're not a professional, the way that I'd operated in the past, in all of, like, you know, performances and being in choirs and different groups, is that if you were a little bit late, it's like, all right, don't do that next time. You'll miss this performance. But I didn't get kicked out the choir, you know? If I was late for class, they said, don't be late. But I can't remember getting in trouble. This was the first time that the patterns that I had built up as a kid and as a teenager and as a young adult actually came back to bite me in the butt because I was late and because I missed time and because I wasn't being professional, even in the pressure to be professional, I lost the job. So those were the three things that I thought of. I thought of imposter syndrome. I thought of the fear of the fear and the pressure of being seen as professional in a space where I didn't feel confident in that. But then also operating in a lot of the different ways of thinking and the ways of acting and being that worked well when I was still a child. So I was a kid trying to be a professional without changing how I'm thinking. Yeah, that's the end.
That makes sense. So I feel like a lot of people, I mean, we did talk about imposter syndrome, like, in full detail in a previous episode, but I feel like a lot of people can relate to it. It's like, well, there are opportunities for me to fully hone my skills and go into the career that I'm passionate about or that I want to focus on or that I want to pursue. Yet in the back of their minds, they're like, but what if I get there and I'm not able to hold on to it? What if I mess up? What if I, you know, even though I want to work with this person, will they see me as enough? Or am I capable of doing these positions? Are people going to see me for the quote-unquote imposter that I am or the, you know, con that I am? And I think a lot of these thought processes aren't true, but they may be coming from a place of fear or a place of coping. You know, you may have had experiences in your past where you've been criticized or you have a lot of internal anger or you internalized a lot of things that were told to you that weren't positive, and then they became almost like your voice, like they kind of get incorporated into you. Because as a kid, you don't really blame other people. When people criticize you, you automatically, most kids internalize that. Like those who externalize, that's a whole different other issue. And that could also be very, very detrimental. But for those of us that internalize, that inner critic becomes very, very difficult to manage. Actually, no. You know what? I retract my statement. Internalizers and externalizers. Because some people externalize their anger. And that can sabotage because they, you know, lash out in anger. They may do things that are provocative, like high sexual, lots of sexual relationships, drugs, alcohol, whatever. Internalizers may do something differently, but they tend to internalize that anger and hate. So all that to say, a lot of our behaviors can stem from having to cope as a child or having to cope as a teenager. And then you take them into your adult life and you recognize, wow, I can't get away with these patterns anymore because one, it's not getting me anywhere. And two, I actually have responsibilities, I have a family to feed, I have myself to feed, I have bills to pay. And now I'm incapable of doing a lot of the things that I want to do as a result of that. I know for me, just to, you know, be transparent, one of the things where I experience self-sabotage is our podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we try our best to keep up. We say we were going to have an episode every other Monday or so. And then life happens and life continues to happen. And, you know, sometimes we struggle with just time, you know, because when you're working, like Chris is a teacher. He's an elementary school teacher. And I don't know if we have listeners who are teachers, but y'all already know what the deal is. You guys are dealing with post-pandemic-ish teaching where the kids you have are behind academically, but also socially. And depending on the age range, you know, that's another factor. So elementary school, these are essentially kindergartners that you guys are being pressured to teach at a second grade level, but they still need their first grade education that wasn't given to them, on top of having to deal with the emotional and social aspects of that as well. And when you come home in the evening, we're not thinking about podcasting. You're trying to decompress and do all the other things that you need to do. You're also working on music. On the weekends, you take a break on Saturday, low-key kind of, but Saturday is also time when you do music. Then Sundays, we also have an opportunity to do stuff, but we watch church, and sometimes we have to serve at church now. And, you know, there's just so much that happens throughout life that we kind of scale back from the podcast. And then by scaling back, we start to feel guilty about the fact that we've scaled back or that we haven't recorded in a month or two and that we said we're going to do this, we said we're going to do that, but look, we're failing. So it's almost like we're feeding into that feedback loop of why we're failures, why we're inconsistent, why we're basically trash. And it's not true. Life does happen. And we also may need help with discipline. And that's okay too, you know, but because of those self-sabotaging behaviors, sometimes even thinking patterns are enough to keep you from doing what you're meant to do. You not only not do the thing that you are supposed to do, but you also don't feel adequate enough or worthy enough to do the thing that you're called to do. And that can be a really hard place to get out of. So I know with me, that's something I've been struggling with. I think that's more of like a fear of failure,
mm-hmm.
A fear of disappointing the listeners and our Joe podcast fam, wherever you guys are. Also wondering if, you know, this is making any impact. I know lack of self-worth has been something I've been struggling with for a while. You know, I do clinical psych, graduated. I applied for a PhD program. One, I know it's kind of unwise, but I was believing for one because I'm trying to find schools that I'm focused on, that focus on the aspects of clinical psych that I'm really passionate about because that's what you typically do with doctorate programs. I didn't get in. I was kind of glad I didn't get in because I'm like, ooh, I don't think I was ready. But since then, it's been very difficult getting back into the field. So as a master's of clinical psych, I can't do counseling because I didn't go through counseling classes, nor did I do an internship. I didn't get the training that you need to become a counselor. Mine was mostly research focused and adult, like psychopathology, which is studying the disorders, understanding where they come from, understanding how they form, understanding how they manifest. So a lot of my program was geared towards students who wanted to buffer their resumes for a PhD program. They also encouraged research and things like that. So I'd been looking for jobs like that, but it's been difficult because I only have a master's. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the jobs in the field that I would be interested in require that you have a doctorate. I've tried to look for like assistants, maybe something where I'm just shadowing or working with the psychologist. I got one internship for 3 months. I was hoping I could do it for longer. They shut down the internship program. And I remember that feeling that I think it was August of this year. I felt so discouraged that for a while, I didn't apply to a lot of things. And then as I stopped applying as much, I continued feeding into this thought process of, wow, Valerie, you went and got your master's at Columbia and you still don't have a job. You still aren't in a doctorate program. You don't have this. You don't have that. And that obviously fed into the amount of self-criticism that I carried as a child, to the point where I wasn't pursuing anything. Because it's like, okay, well, you're not doing clinical psych now. Why don't you try some other things for now? You know, I do want to become a psychologist officially one day. So why not do like Uber Eats or walk dogs or, you know, do Zumba, all the other things that you have that can generate income? Because again, I'm also looking for a job to generate income. And I talked myself out of all these different things because I just felt so low about what I perceived as my incapability of making it in the field, even with just a master's. I have a master's, but I have a very wide array of experiences that could easily trump any type of education. But because I'm comparing myself to all of these big known people, all of the people in my programs that are in doctorate programs or in jobs that are really great, my lack of research experience, like all of that mentally weighed on me, emotionally impacted me, and I felt paralyzed for months to the point where I'm not even applying for jobs that are relatively easy to come by, that are pretty flexible. I even have imposter syndrome from the part-time job I have now, which is an administrative assistant at my church. Like, it's a mess. It's an entire mess. And it wasn't until one of my best friends called me out on it. She shared how frustrated she's been, not at me per se, but at the fact that I feel like I keep getting stuck and I keep complaining to her about how stuck I feel. And she's able to see, Valerie, you're only stuck because you're not applying. You're not going after opportunities. Why is that? And once she said that, it's almost like God opened up my eyes to realize, Val, you're the one keeping yourself from all the other opportunities of jobs that you can do while you wait for the time period for you to pursue your doctorate. And that, I think, was an example of self-sabotage. I know we're giving long examples, but we're hoping that these personal examples provide some insight that you would be able to see, oh, well, this is how self-sabotage looks like. I do this a lot more often than I care to admit, and Chris and I do too. So yeah, all that to say, I'm now working on getting jobs. I'm now working on trying to get out of that self-sabotaging behavior pattern. I'm not saying that I've overcome it yet, but I'm trying to act against what I feel, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah. So here's what I was thinking while you were shit.
Ew.
Thanks, Valerie.
I'm just kidding.
Here's what I was thinking while you were talking and sharing so beautifully.
Oh.
That's my wife. I was thinking about just how much of self-sabotage is rooted in a flawed and false sense of identity.
Ooh.
And naturally, because this is what I bring to this communication, I was thinking of different examples from the Bible and like thinking, how do we link it, right? But the way that I see it is that there are times when self-sabotage is, you know, wrong patterns of thinking. And it's like, bro, sis, fam, you got to do better. But then there are some times where it's both that and it's kind of sinful, too. The way that I think about it is like, I think of Saul, right? And Saul was anointed by God to be the king of Israel. He was chilling and he was rocking it. But then at some point, he's fighting the Philistines, and Samuel, the prophet at the time, who actually anointed Saul and said, you finna be king, he was going to come in 7 days to, like, do this sacrifice, right? So a week passed, and Saul didn't hear from Samuel, and all of the Israelites were getting restless, right? So now Saul wants to prepare for battle, so he actually offers the sacrifices. He offers the sacrifices because he's impatient for Samuel to come back, and in my head, I'm also thinking about the fact that, like, not only is he itching to go to battle because he's the king of Israel, right? And all of Israel is looking at him, all of Israel is looking at him to be like, yo, we need to go fight because this is a, you know, we can't do this. So that, to me, sounds like fear of failure, right? It's like, oh, but if Samuel doesn't come to do, like, if the sacrifices don't get done, then the Lord's not going to be with us, and then we'll fail. Right. So then in this instance, it's actually an action of self-sabotage. I do a lot of procrastination and inaction of self-sabotage. But in this case, I'm seeing action with self-sabotage. I also thought about Gideon, who I feel like was just teetering on the edge of self-sabotage, because God came, an angel came down to Gideon while Israel was once again away from the Lord, because that's just what they do. And an angel came down and was like, the Lord is with you. And he's like, God called you to lead Israel, and you're going to free them, and you're going to lead them back and be one of my judges. And Gideon asked God 3 times for proof. Right now, yes, test the word and see if it lines up with the word of God every time you get like a big thing from somebody who says, oh, the Lord has spoken to me, right? Like, that's okay. But like 3 miracles, like an angel. Like, angels are scary, y'all. Look up a description of an angel. It is not a white man with blonde hair and 2 wings on his back, all right? It is terrifying. And this terrifying angel came down and was like, God said you should do this. And before Gideon actually went on with it, he asked for those 3 miracles. As a matter of fact, when they found Gideon, he was threshing wheat. That's something that you need to do in an open area so that the pieces of wheat that are falling off, he's beating the wheat on the ground to get rid of the inedible stuff, right? And the wind needs to carry it away. But he's doing it at the bottom of a wine press, the bottom of a pit, the bottom of a hole, right? So he's not even doing the job properly, but that's because he's afraid, right? So now we also see that fear coming in as well. So I was just thinking about how tied to identity a lot of the acts of self-sabotage I've experienced, you've experienced, and that I see in the Bible, like how tied to a false sense or a flawed sense of self there are. And when I say flawed, I'm not just talking about like low self-esteem. I'm also talking about, like in the case of Saul, like I feel like a self-esteem that is too pumped up. You know, one that's too prideful or too big, or I'm the king, or I'm this amazing singer, so y'all should keep me just because I'm good, even though I've sabotaged every other area of professionalism that I'm bringing to this relationship. Like, y'all should just keep me just because of that. And I'm not saying I was thinking that consciously, but I know that that's at least something that may have crossed my mind at the time that I'm at least seeing here. So that flawed sense of identity, I think, comes into play when we're talking about self-sabotage. Yeah. So we actually talked about a few different examples of self-sabotage, right? We talked about, I talked about procrastination, right?
That's usually coming from a fear of not doing the job well enough, or feeling so overwhelmed that you're not going to be capable of doing the job, so you just don't even attempt to do it until the very last minute.
Like perfectionism.
Perfectionism could be a big aspect of why we may fall into self-sabotaging behaviors. Another example of self-sabotage is prioritizing instant gratification. That's kind of like self-explanatory, low-key, but it's also something that can become detrimental. Like if you think about food, I know I'm one of those people that I eat, I emotionally eat, and I'm working on trying not to do that. But it's like that instant gratification of, I don't feel really good right now. And I know if I eat a slice of cake, the anticipation of having that cake will make me feel better. Eating the cake will make me feel better. Don't necessarily feel better afterward, but it's nice that for that short amount of time, I was able to gratify something to help cover up the discomfort that I was feeling on the inside. Picking fights. So if you're somebody who externalizes that anger, you may, you know what? Let's talk about picking fights when it comes to like relationships and friendships. Let's say you're in a relationship with somebody or you're dating somebody and it's going great. But for some reason, because it's going so great, you feel at unease and discomfort.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing because I'm thinking all of the memes that I've seen where it's like the man says nothing and then the woman, oh, so you talking about that other girl, right? You probably cheating on me right now. It's hilarious. Okay, it was funny.
But that, I mean, those memes, the reason why we love memes is because we all can relate to them to some extent. And it's like, it's in a comedic way, but we're like, wow, I thought I was the only one that did that. I do that too. This is hilarious. Everybody needs to see this. And it becomes viral, right? But I feel like people may pick fights in relationships, not with any type of provocation. They just pick in a fight to pick a fight. So what I was saying is, you know, I'll even tell a story because I feel like I speak much more clearly when I give an example. Mm-hmm. When I was dating Chris, at the very beginning when we were talking, we would talk for like hours. I was in Florida for Christmas break, and because it was the Christmas holidays, we were both pretty free. So we were able to talk on the phone a lot and almost every night for a good amount of time. And I was like, I like him and he likes him. He legitimately loves Jesus and he's super kind to his family. He's great with his mom. He takes care of his siblings. He's working to do the best that he can. There must be something wrong. And I remember that one morning I got up and just felt so uneasy. I was like, this is too good to be true. Thankfully, I called one of my best friends and was like, girl, I don't know. This feels too much. I feel overwhelmed. She's like, stop it. Receive the blessing that God has given you and keep it pushing. And even though I was uncomfortable, I realized I was about to operate in self-sabotage because I'm so used to dysfunction. I'm so used to having to fight for my relationships and fight for the affections of guys and men that when it was willingly given to me to such a large extent, I wanted to shrink away. I didn't pick a fight per se because I don't typically argue with people or fight with people, but I wanted to run in some capacity. I wasn't saying I wanted to break up with you. That's not what I'm saying.
She's really trying to run away from me, y'all.
That's not what I'm saying, but I was afraid because I was like, this feels too much. This feels too good to be true. So arguably, picking fights can often happen because of that. You get a little bit too vulnerable or you're getting to a place where you have to be vulnerable. If you're not comfortable with vulnerability, then you're going to pick a fight to prevent yourself from having to get to that place with somebody or something.
Right.
Choosing to walk away when things don't go smoothly. I'm trying not to identify as a quitter because I know I've walked away from several things in my life. I know some of those things I walked away from because it was too much for me. A part of me is wondering, was I not mentally tough? In some cases, I feel like I could have found a way to make it work and just fought through it. I didn't know that at the time, so I'm trying to give myself grace. But I guess I wish I would have known what I know now back then so that I could have applied it.
I think that one thing to say about this one in particular, though, is that there's a difference between choosing to walk away when things don't go smoothly and that being self-sabotage and choosing to walk away because that's the healthy decision. And I think that there has to be that discernment when it comes to it. So, like, if God placed you somewhere or you know that this is where you're supposed to be, like, you're not going to be in some place that's easy all the time. If you're in a place that's easy all the time, then how are you going to grow? Like, it's that struggle. That's what helps build your muscle, right? And there is a possibility that the place that you are at, no matter how much you love it or how important it is to you or how good it looks on your resume or how good they look on your arm, like, it actually is not serving your mental health in the best way. So, like, it does take that kind of discernment to really figure out, okay, so is this my time to leave or is this just hard?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Before I officially left this thing, there were times before I was meant to go that I wanted to quit and I wanted to walk away. And yes, it was toxic. Yes, it was very much degrading my mental and emotional well-being. And if I was meant to stay, I wish I would have put in things in place to help me cope, healthily deal with, get some advice from my coworkers. Like, some of the stuff that I heard, I was like, I should have been doing the same thing because I put too much pressure on myself because I wanted to be a perfectionist. So, yes, walked away from my mental and emotional being. Yes, we definitely want to highlight that. And we also want to make sure that we're discerning about when we're meant to leave. Because I think there's a difference between knowing when God's giving you the green light to leave and walking away versus walking away because this isn't what I wanted. This isn't the way that I think it should go. This isn't what I signed up for or whatever have you. And I know that can be kind of tricky and it's circumstantial. But again, we're highlighting discernment.
I think the last thing to say, last thing I'll say about it. What was I gonna say? I made a joke and I was loud and I forgot what I was saying. Stop everything. Hold on. Okay, there it is. I think that that's, it's okay. I got it. All right. Last thing to say about this. I think that it's important to really look at that just like how you were saying, like, It will take that discernment to decide whether or not you should stay, whether or not you should go, and debating, like, the mental health aspect of it. But I also think about how important listening to the voice of the Lord is for that. Just because I think about how you learned stuff in, like, the last 6 months at your job. When you wanted to leave at month 3 and leave at month 4, right? That would have been great for your mental health, but it may have still been an act of self-sabotage.
Wait.
So sometimes what God is asking you to do, I'm not saying that he's going to purposefully put you in a position where your mental health will be damaged beyond repair, but rather God often uses really difficult situations to teach us something about us or teach us something about him. So I think about all the lessons that you learned in the last few months at your job to now, once you left that spot, like, you miles better, right? And when you're looking for work now, you're not looking for work and just looking all willy-nilly. You're not just, you're actually looking at, like, the job descriptions and thinking about how it would affect you and how it would affect me. And yeah, just knowing that, like, sometimes God will ask you to stay longer than it is comfortable. But that's also the moment where it is important that you're taking those steps for your mental health so that you are not self-sabotaging in the name of comfort, which we will talk about later. My personal favorite, and by favorite, I mean I do this one a lot, is the putting yourself down and the self-defeating thoughts. That's depression through and through, but, like, I also think about the fact that, like, I'm very, very used to, I don't want to say I'm used to receiving pity because I don't think that's the truth now anymore. But, like, as a kid, I was very sensitive. I was very, you know, I would cry a lot. I would be sad. And, like, I didn't receive a lot of validation when it came to, like, you know, depression and being sad. But the very first time I had somebody, like, be nice to me because they saw I was sad, I was like, wow, that's great. But there's also that comparison to other people, right? So there's the putting myself down, like, having those thoughts kind of be repeating from adolescence, as well as kind of like going back to choosing to walk away when things don't go smoothly. Like, when things don't go smoothly, immediately going to, wow, not only is this all your fault, but you could have done better. And here are 9 ways you could have done it better. This is all your fault. You should just give up. Or you don't have to give up because you have a lot of stuff to do, but you need to feel bad about this because of the fact that you could have done better. It's that you could have done better thinking that, man, it's rough. It's rough over here, you know? So putting yourself down, self-defeating thoughts, both of those things definitely examples of self-sabotage. Last thing, sorry, very passionate about this one. This is actually an instance of self-sabotage that I feel like doesn't always immediately externalize itself in an action or inaction, right? Because like if I'm having moments of self-defeating thoughts or putting myself down at work as a teacher, if I'm putting myself down at 9:45 in the morning, I can't just stop teaching, you know? So I have to teach for the rest of the day, right? I might not teach my best, but like I don't teach my best every day. So that's fine. But even though the action isn't externalizing in my next lesson or in the close of the day or in my planning, like because the thoughts are repeating, then further down the line, it's going to externalize and maybe even externalize in a bigger way than if I kind of succumb to it right from the beginning. So it's kind of like that buildup, you know? So, yeah. So self-defeating thoughts, putting yourself down. I know that one.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people underestimate the power of the way that you think. There's a reason why CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy, is so big, because what they're working to do is to change the way you think in order to improve the way that you behave, right? So people think, well, if I have self-defeating thoughts, that shouldn't keep me from doing what I need to do and doing it well and keep pushing through. And it's like, remember what we say on this podcast, psychology is a science. It's a part of the body. Your mind, your brain is a part of your body. You can actually perpetuate certain processes to occur in your brain through a lot of negative thinking. That's why they say, I think studies show that if somebody has like a life-threatening illness or, you know, a very critical illness, and they're surrounded by love and positivity and believe in a higher power and all these different things, those are things that don't physically do anything, but because of that mindset shift, it's almost like your brain is activating certain things that help improve your circumstances, improve your health, and you're much better off than if you were to succumb to a negative pattern of thinking. Right. I wish I knew the exact science to it. I'm thinking like of stress. I know that stress actually can cause high levels of cortisol in your body, which causes a lot of fatigue, which weakens your immune system, which causes a lot of muscle soreness, stomach problems, like all of this different stuff. Okay, so maybe I do know a little bit of science. But there are just certain neurochemicals and hormones in your body that are impacted by the way that you think. Because again, the way that you think is programmed by your brain, which is an actual physical thing in your body. So I want people to keep in mind that, yes, even though we're talking about self-sabotaging thoughts and behaviors, please understand that the way that you feel and the way that you experience these negative thoughts and feelings do have an impact on your physical and emotional well-being to the point where it does impact you and your ability to do things, you know?
Exactly.
So, all this talk about it, how about we talk about how to overcome?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess.
I mean, I don't know how much time we've been talking. I guess we're excited. It's been, how long has it been?
I don't know, but we're going to figure it out later. It's going to be fun. All right, so how to overcome it. I feel like this first thing is important for everything. It's not just for self-sabotage. So first, identify the behaviors. Actually, even before that, I think that I sent you this TikTok and you have not watched it
yet. Yes, I did.
Oh, you did. Okay, never mind. It was this TikTok about feeling feelings and how we don't feel feelings the right way. I think that actually might be one of the first things to do, even before you identify the behavior, is like identify how you're feeling and put aside what the feeling want, like what thoughts are accompanying the feeling, and just check in with your body and see how you're feeling, right? So like if you're feeling sad, you're not thinking about why you're feeling sad or the self-defeating thoughts that come with feeling sad. First, just sit and think, what does my body feel right now as it feels sad? Breathe in that and like do whatever you need to do with that, right? Also, then identify those behaviors, right? So like self-sabotage for me is procrastination. Self-sabotage for me is isolation. Self-sabotage for me is inaction. That's self-sabotage for me. I'm not an active self-sabotager. I'm an inactive one. I just coined a term. Can I get published in a journal?
Do it.
Yes. Yeah, okay. So identify your feeling, identify the behaviors. And I think after you identify the behaviors, you have to learn what is triggering it. So like, for instance, for me, what triggers my self-sabotagingness? A bad lesson at work. A child yelling at me in my face for hours. It's a rough year, y'all. Just anything that tells my brain that I did a bad job. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was also thinking about some of the things that have helped me so far. I agree with identifying the behaviors, finding out what triggers it. I loved what you said about letting yourself feel the emotions that you're experiencing. Because I think as people, we either act on the emotion or we try to rationalize through it. Which you can be like, I'm sad. Why am I sad? What's going on? All of these different things. And you prevent yourself from actually feeling the emotion, which tends to suppress, which is now it's getting personal and I'm feeling some type of way. I need to stop doing that. Something that has helped me tremendously in addition to what you mentioned is talking about it. I think that I try my best to be vulnerable and transparent with the people closest to me. So that's friends and family. I also think that it's important to be transparent and honest with your therapist, because they literally have the tools and the ability to be able to identify the patterns as well. So you can identify certain patterns and belief systems that are no longer serving you, but a therapist is also trained to additionally look at it from a much more objective and more expansive view, because they see the whole picture. We're only able to see a certain aspect of the picture because we have a lot of stake in our own lives. But a therapist is able to take, you know, a step back and be like, well, I hear you and I see what you've identified, and that's great. And I also think, and they might be able to share some knowledge and insight that you may not have, no matter how insightful and self-aware you are. So I think talking about it has been helpful because, one, I'm talking about what I'm feeling. I'm talking about what I'm experiencing. And even if I do understand some of my self-sabotaging behaviors, it's helpful for other people to identify it, and they may be able to make connections that I didn't. I kind of talked about therapeutic support already, but it's the same thing. Therapists are trained to look for problematic thoughts and behaviors that are impeding your ability to live a full life and help you get the tools and the coping skills that you need in order for you to live a much more fulfilling life, including no longer self-sabotaging. I think a big one that a lot of people may benefit from, I know I need to work on this one a little bit, but it's been so helpful, is identify what it is that you truly want whenever you're engaging in self-sabotaging behavior. So oftentimes we self-sabotage not because we want to prevent ourselves from reaching our goal, but we may feel so uncomfortable, so uncertain, so anxious, so whatever fill in the blank feeling you have. And we're trying to do something. We're trying to make something happen or make something not happen to escape those emotions and feelings, or to make ourselves feel better. So for instance, when I'm really anxious or uncomfortable and it's not going away very easily, it's harder for me to identify it, or even if I am identifying it, I'm still having to learn how to sit with that feeling. I don't want to sit with that feeling for long. And so what I may do is try to find food that, you know, I could be excited about. That may be dessert most of the time, or sugar, or unhealthy food. I hate that I don't ever want to like crave vegetables when I feel this way. I always want something super unhealthy for me, which, you know, definitely let us know if you're the same as well. But for me, I'm looking for comfort. Because I feel discomfort in my anxiety, because I feel my discomfort in the situation that I'm in, I'm looking for any means of comfort that I can experience that are not just unhealthy and self-gratifying, but don't really address the actual thing that I need, which is comfort. They provide a very temporary tangible means of it, but it's so short-lived that it doesn't really make that much of an impact in the greater scheme. So, and I think that's why therapeutic support is important there too, because they help you learn how to sit in your discomfort and how to manage yourself when you're dealing with this discomfort. Because that's the thing, we're always guaranteed discomfort. We're always guaranteed change. If you love Jesus, you're always guaranteed to be put out of your comfort zone.
Sucks.
And that's where, one, you learn how to sit in that discomfort. I also think, like you were saying before, finding your identity in the Lord is going to be a really important aspect too. And I feel like that's such an abstract concept. Like, oh, your identity is in the Lord. Like, what does that legitimately mean? Like, because people say it all the time. For me, it's like, God created me a specific way. There are things in my childhood that I naturally felt inclined to. There are things that are in me that I'm so passionate about that it can't come from just me, you know? This wasn't man-made. This wasn't curated. This wasn't pressured from anybody. And I think those are great places to start, you know? And when you know who you are in the Lord, and yes, you're aware of your dysfunction, you're working through it, but you see your strengths, you see your passions, you see your fears, you see your struggles, but you see the God that is more than able to compensate for them, then I think self-sabotaging behaviors start to get on the back burner, because you start operating in a much more confident and assured place in your life. So those are just a couple of others that can help you overcome self-sabotaging.
The last thing that I'll say is my favorite verse in the Bible, Philippians 4, verse 8. And I was thinking about this in relation to the self-sabotaging thoughts that I was talking about earlier. And I was thinking, like, what happens if you think this verse, but about yourself? We've used this verse to talk about how the Bible talked about CBT even before CBT was a thing. But the verse says, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. So I was thinking, like, what happens when we say, okay, Lord, I know that you're working through my life, so I want to think about what's true about me and you, what's noble about me because of you, what's right about me because of you, what's pure about me because of you, what's lovely, what's admirable about me because of you. If anything is excellent or praiseworthy about me because of you, help me to think about those things. So that it can change how you think about yourself, change how you view yourself in light of the gospel, as well as kind of fight those self-sabotaging thoughts.
Holy crap.
Can you cuss, right? Like, okay.
Y'all, I'm married to this man, and sometimes he be bringing gems, and I'm like, where was that? 15 minutes ago. 30 days ago. That was brilliant.
Oh, thanks, babe. I mean, it's the Lord. That's something praiseworthy. I'm going to think about that.
Right, that, you know, here's a perfect example. Christopher Lilly has a very expansive way of thinking. For him, he's able to make connections to things that I would have never even fathomed thinking about. Or if I did, I did it subconsciously, so I probably can't communicate it that well. But Chris can. And something that I love about Chris is he takes scriptures that we know and love and appreciate and have memorized because we hear them so often, and gives a fresh perspective. Like, I love how God uses him in that way. I would argue a lot of people at our church when he leads worship feel that way, but I digress. And you can be confident of the Lord through you that's always going to be something you bring to the table. And it's not a sense of pride. We're trying to not evoke pride, because we don't want pride. We want humility. But we want to get away from false humility that often causes us to fall into self-sabotaging behavior. Because if you know you have that gift and you're like, Lord, use me the way that you've created me to be, that's just self-assurance in the Lord and who he created you to be. And because of that self-assurance, you walk out and you're just like, all right, y'all, I got something to say based off of what the Lord told me. Let me tell you about Philippians 4:8. And the way that you think, like, nobody would have thought to, I have never, guys, I'm overwhelmed right now. I have never heard that verse come into connection with self-defeating thoughts, self-sabotaging thoughts, mental health. Like, this is why our podcast exists. I'm getting excited.
She's yelling.
This is why our podcast exists. Like, we're trying to make scripture much more, not just palatable, but understandable so that we can actually apply it to our lives, particularly because of the podcast, our mental health. I'm done. That's all I have to say. Thank you for listening. That was a beautiful way to end it.
Thank you, everyone. listen, I'm going to...
I'm a mess.
We talked about...
I'm really glad I married this guy.
We talked about it at the top of our episode, so I'm going to link the imposter syndrome episode down in the show notes. So if you're not watching, they're listening. If you're listening
maybe
on Spotify...
Maybe we need to get on YouTube one day, because we have very... We've been told we should be on YouTube, but I think it's because we're dramatic. Anyway.
Right. It'll be in the show notes, so if you're
listening. Words are hard.
Listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you know where to find it. Same thing on Anchor. You can also follow us on Instagram because we are at the Job... At @_thejobproject_ on Instagram. You'll see both of our beautiful faces if you want to support us. You can also support us through Anchor. We actually have our listener support tab up and running. It is there. And we already have somebody who has signed on to support us each month. So we really appreciate that. And thank you for listening to our podcast and supporting us. Every time you decide to contribute to the podcast, all the money goes right back into the podcast, getting more quality information and more quality equipment to better serve you. So thank you so much for listening, and let's break stigmas together.
Hey-o.
Bye,
y'all.
Goodbye.